Job chapter number 1. We're going to stay within this book this morning. The Bible is much like a medicine cabinet, insofar that I tell our folks all the time, if you want to see the Bible come alive in your life, find yourself in the Bible. As you're reading through it, find somebody who's going through the same thing that you're going through. And boy, I'll tell you what, the Bible just... One verse just kind of is lifted off the page there, because that's the one that the Holy Spirit's wanting to use to help you. And so when I'm having to deal with an enemy trying to hurt me, trying to hurt the church, it seems like I'm driven to the Psalms, because David was going through so many trials because of the enemies that were trying to destroy him. When I got a tough decision to make and I'm really praying over, what direction should I go on in this thing? It seems like people just gravitate toward the book of Proverbs when they've got that crucial decision that they got to come up with something. As I'm counseling individuals, I think so many times the perfect place, I wish that they would go to the Song of Solomon and read about what true love is all about. So what do you do when your world's been being turned upside down? When you're being crushed by circumstances, when you find yourself in a nightmare that never ends. I promise you one thing, over the last year, I just about guarantee that more people have been driven to the book of Job than any other book. Because when it seems like when your life is just kind of coming apart at the seams, we think of Job. And God chose to reveal so many things about his life in this book. I think it's just a gold mine in how to deal with problems, how to handle them. But I also think that when we come to the book of Job, we're kind of missing it too. There's a saying that goes, you can't see the forest for the trees. And what that means is that when you're just surrounded by problems, it just seems like it's hard to tell up from down. It's hard to make sense what's going on in my life. And you've got an issue over here and you're trying to deal with it, and then you got something behind you, and it just seems like you're sometimes just inundated with issues and problems. Kind of like being in a foxhole during combat. Doesn't matter who the enemy is, doesn't matter whether it's right or wrong to be there, you're just trying to keep from getting shot. And that's pretty much how life is. It just seems it goes from one hot spot to the next hot spot, and got bullets over here and more things coming from over here. When I was a Navy pilot flying off of a carrier, my specialty, I was trained above and all things to drop bombs on targets. My job specifically was, I was trained to drop a nuclear weapon. And so every time I went out, the whole thing was, targets were everything. Bombs to blow things up. Kind of a nice occupation when you think about it. But there was one danger that sometimes we lost sight of. And that is, when you start staring at a target too long, you can fly into the ground. One day I was scheduled to go out and fly out with a guy. He had over 2,000 hours of flight time. The guy was a higher ranking officer than me, and we were supposed to go out and drop bombs together in the Mediterranean. And my plane went down. I wasn't able to go. Went back to the ready room and found out later on that he never made it back. He flew into the water. And it was a gorgeous day. Sun was out. It was beautiful. What happened was, he stared at the target too long. It's called target fixation. And what happens when you're dropping bombs also happens when you're fighting for your life. And the devil is nipping at your heels and you got problems everywhere. Because what happens is, Satan will allow a problem to just erupt in your life. And what we'll do is, we'll stare at it. We'll become fixated on that. We imagine that we're the only one in the world who's facing this. We feel alone. And we can experience a lot of damage if we're not careful by staring at these problems. As you look at Job's life, and we're going to go through these issues and these problems that he was facing because the Lord is recording them because they're such a wealth of encouragement. And so when we're going through something, that reminds me of Job, and we go there and kind of refresh ourselves of what he went through and how he handled it and how he dealt with it. But we have to make sure that we're not looking at these problems as if they're individual problems. They're united. And that's what we're going to take a look at this morning. I want you to take a look at Job chapter 1, verse number 13. We're familiar with this passage, but I want to remind you of this. The worst thing in Job's life was not the loss of his wealth. In verse 13, "And there was a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house, and there came a messenger unto Job and said, the oxen were plowing, and the asses were feeding beside them, and the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." And then the bad news keeps on coming. In verse 16, he lost the sheep. In verse 17, he lost the camels. And so, I don't know how old he was, but I envision him as being kind of toward the sunset years of life. Had a lot of wealth, had a lot of things to look forward to. In a matter of hours, it was gone. A number of years ago, we had a family moved from Ohio to our church. And as this husband was sharing with me what he had gone through, you hear this and your heart breaks. The guy had spent, I don't know, 20-some years working at a factory. Went to work one day, and on the fence it says closed. They closed the factory, didn't tell anybody. Overnight, he doesn't have a job. Overnight, he has no retirement. He lost his pension. Everything was gone. And he came to Kokomo, and nobody moves to Kokomo. He's the exception. He moved to Kokomo because they had a job nearby. In his late 50s, he's looking at trying to rebuild his life financially, and he was ruined. Now, to his credit, he went to church. But can you imagine waking up tomorrow to discover that your retirement savings is gone? Your hope of a pension, gone? I've told our folks for years, I hope it's there, but what if Social Security is not around when you retire? And so there's some scary things that can happen to a person, and when you lose every dime you've got, that's a pretty frightening situation. Small businesses and employees throughout the country have been experiencing a lot of pain, a lot of financial pain because of this COVID thing. And one of the greatest frustrations is the people who are deciding to shut down the economy are still getting a paycheck while nobody else is. I really wish, and I've not ever heard this position, but I wish the politicians didn't get a paycheck if the people they represent didn't get one. Because I don't think that we'd been locked down near as long or talking about it in the future. When Job heard the news that his livestock, his workers were wiped out, his automatic question is, how am I going to survive? And again, Job was flesh and blood. He's like you and I. If you worry about how am I going to pay the mortgage, Job was too. If you're worried at all about the future of where you work at, Job was wondering about how he was going to survive as well. He was just like us. Adolf Merkel was a 74-year-old billionaire. The guy was heavily invested in Volkswagen, but when the Great Recession came around in 2009, Volkswagen stock hit bottom. He used to be the 95th richest person in the world before the collapse. After that, he was called the billionaire with empty pockets. I mean, he was hurting financially. Rather than try to pick himself up off the ground and try to rebuild his fortune, he chose to walk in front of a moving freight train. And he took his life because he was so much in despair. I think that you can all appreciate when you lose everything, you don't know how you're going to survive. And when a person comes to the place where they're financially wiped out, the Holy Spirit says, what about Job? What did he do? Because he lost everything. But keep this in mind. Oh, that was bad. It was horrible. But that wasn't his worst problem. Take a look at chapter 1, verse 18. And here you find the worst thing in his life was not even the loss of his children. In verse 18, while he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. All of his children wiped out. And I don't know if you've ever considered this. Does it not seem odd to you that his grown kids were having a banquet and they didn't even invite mom and dad? Isn't that strange? It almost looks like there was some strange relationships there. The brothers and sisters, they'd all gathered together. They were having a good old family picnic type thing, and Job and his wife were not even invited. Not present. Mother's Day is always a very special holiday. It's a day when children reach out to their mothers and they shower them with praise and affection. But Mother's Day back in 1943 in the town of Waterloo, Iowa, was not one of those special days. Aletta Sullivan and her husband Tom had been told 4 months earlier that all five of their sons, the Sullivan boys, they'd all been killed. All five were killed in the Battle of Guadalcanal. They were on the ship, the USS Juno. They all went down with the ship. She lost all of her sons at once. We can hope and we can pray. How are we going to handle that if that ever happens to us? And that thought has always crossed the mind of every parent. And we hope that we could handle it right. We hope. Truth of the matter is, we don't know until we're notified all of our children were killed. Some people handle it differently. A number of years ago, Sheriff Buford Pusser was ambushed by some individuals down in Tennessee. His wife was killed. He chose a path of revenge. Killed every one of them except, I think, one survived. He was so infuriated by what took place, he took justice into his own hands. And there were so many people, it resonated with them because it just wasn't right what happened to him. They made a movie about what he did, and I think it was called Walking Tall. He was never convicted. And the reason was because people knew exactly how he felt. For Aletta Sullivan, she was crushed. She was broken by the loss of her sons. But instead of getting mad at God, instead of becoming angry and bitter, she chose a different path. She chose to travel the country supporting her nation during the war. And she was encouraging people to buy war bonds. She lost five sons in that war. And she's still supporting it. We need to win this thing. Traveling the country with a broken heart. Job didn't lose five children. He lost 10. Can you imagine going to a cemetery, 10 caskets lined up? It was horrible. But that was not the worst thing he ever had to face. In chapter 2, verse number 7, we find that the worst thing in Job's life was not the loss of his health. Verse 7, so Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the soles of his foot unto his crown, and he took him a potsherd to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes. People will sometimes take pride in the physical issues that they've had to overcome in life. And I think that's good. They were able to overcome something. They were able to face something with a proper attitude, a right spirit. If they lose their wealth, a person can make that decision with the right attitude. They can decide, you know what, I'm gonna do what I can to try to rebuild my wealth. When they face a personal tragedy, they can have that attitude that'll cause them to put on a happy face. And though they're brokenhearted on the inside, they can try to still be an encouragement and a blessing to other people on the outside. But when it comes to dealing with the matter of going from perfect health to horrible health, that is a tough one. To go from being an individual that is so self-reliant, they're strong, they're independent, they can maintain control of their lives physically, and come to the place where they can't even get out of bed without help, can't go to the bathroom without help, totally reliant on somebody else. Christopher Reeve became an international movie star when he played Superman back in 1978. It was so popular, he ended up making 4 Superman movies. He was a natural athlete. The guy was tall, good-looking. And now that he was rich and famous, people envied him all over the world because he now had it made. He had political connections. He was personal friends with Ronald Reagan. They were using his celebrity status to put on the Special Olympics and really make this thing a big deal in the United States. But in 1995, his life was drastically altered. He was riding a horse. He was trying to jump a 3-foot-high fence. He'd done it hundreds of times before. For some reason, the horse stopped. He went head over heels over top of the horse, landed on his neck. In a matter of seconds, he went from one of the leading men in Hollywood to being a quadriplegic. And he stayed that way for the next 9 years of his life. Job lived at a time when there were no doctors. There were no hospitals. There were no miracle drugs that could help him. He lost his health completely. And all he can do is take a broken piece of pottery and try to scrape the pus out of his boils. His health was gone. His life was total misery. A very frightening journey indeed. How's he going to manage? A couple of months back, one of the ladies in our church sang special music, sang choir, just such a crucial foundation block in our church. Cancer came back. And I went to visit her, and for the first time, I hadn't seen her in a couple of weeks. When I walked in and I saw her, she didn't look the same person. And the reason was because I saw it in her eyes. For the first time in this woman's life, I saw, "Preacher, I'm scared. I'm frightened." She died in a matter of days. When a person has their health disappear, how are they going to function? Who's going to care for them? How will they manage? For Job, it was a frightening journey. And unfortunately, in every church, you're going to find the same thing. A very difficult, frightening journey. A person's health, it's just taken. And God allowed it. in Job's life. God allowed it. In chapter 2, verse number 9, we find that the worst thing in Job's life was not the loss of his wife's support. In verse 9, the Bible there says, "Then said his wife unto him, Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. But he said unto her, Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this, did not Job sin with his lips." As devastated as Christopher Reeve was in that injury to his spine, there was one thing in his life that continued to give him hope. And that was his wife. Her name was Dana. They'd only been married 3 years. And in a matter of seconds, her husband was transformed before her very eyes. From being a rich millionaire, making movies, making money, famous, he can't walk. Can't even move his arms. He could never hug her again. Her life was shattered. Her life was transformed. She loved riding horses. But she said, "From the day that my husband got injured, I never rode a horse again." Why is that? I didn't want to make him feel bad. He's lost so much, wasn't his fault. I don't want to hurt him. I'm going out riding horses. That was the cause of his injury. I couldn't do that to him. In his autobiography, Christopher mentioned the time when he was so discouraged, he contemplated suicide. Trying to figure out, I'm a quadriplegic, how can I commit suicide? And sometimes individuals, they've tried to chew their tongue off, hoping to bleed to death before somebody found them. And he had tried to bring about the end of his life, and his wife discovered it. And she said, "We're going to have a sit-down talk right now." She said this, "I will support you whatever you want to do, because this is your life and your decision. But I want you to know that I will be with you for the long haul, no matter what. You're still you, and I love you." It was not easy for him trying to regain mobility by blowing through a straw, trying to move his wheelchair. It wasn't easy trying to learn how to talk and being out of breath, just uttering one word. But there was one place where he always knew he could find hope. And that was his wife. That is the kind of love that every person hopes to find one day in their lifetime. Another human being that knows all your faults, all your weaknesses, and they still love you. And when your world comes crashing down, they don't get a divorce and go find somebody else who's healthy. They stick with you. That is an extremely rare kind of love. Job came to the place where his life was unraveling, but his wife was not encouraging him. "Why don't you just shut up, quit your whining, and die?" That was not an encouraging conversation. Could it possibly get any worse? He's scraping the pus out of his wounds. He's financially ruined. His kids have all been buried. Can it possibly get any worse? Oh, yeah. The devil's going to make sure of that. It can always get worse, and that's when Satan got a hold of his wife and allowed some very foolish, stinging words to come out of her mouth. But out of fairness to her, she too had lost her financial future. What if my husband dies before me? How am I going to survive? My kids are all gone. We've lost the farm. How am I going to manage? Job didn't just lose his 10 kids, they were hers too. And while he lost his health, he was now a burden on her as caregiver as well. We don't know if it was a weak moment on her part or if her love for him had actually died. All we know is that when marital love disappears, it's one of the most agonizing things that can happen in a person's life. Take a look at Job chapter 4, verse number 5. And we're now introduced to yet another issue. The worst thing in his life, however, was not the betrayal by his friends. And down in verse 5, "But now it has come upon thee, and thou faintest, it toucheth thee, and thou art troubled. Is not this thy fear, thy confidence, thy hope, and the uprightness of thy ways? Remember, I pray thee, whoever perished being innocent? Or where were the righteous cut off? Even as I have seen they that plow iniquity, Job, and sow wickedness reap the same." You got some hidden things in your life, Job. That's why all this bad stuff's happening. You're not right with God like we are. That's why you're facing these issues. Now, his friends had traveled a great distance to try to cheer Job up. That was the original intent. The Bible tells us for 7 days, they just sat there. And I'll tell you what, they serve us as such an important way of extending compassion to somebody. You know, sometimes a church member or a staff member will go and visit somebody in the hospital and they'll try to say dumb things. They're going to tell them exactly why this happened and how they ought to feel and what they need to do. I've learned in the pastor that sometimes the best thing that you can do is say nothing. Just to be there. You don't have to have the golden words to give them. They just need to see that somebody cares. And you have no idea what God's doing. And so instead of trying to make up something and look smart, maybe sometimes we just need to let our presence show somebody how much we really care. Job was broken. He was discouraged. And for 7 days, to their credit, his friends just sat alongside him. They didn't lecture him, didn't preach to him, didn't tell him what God was up to. They just sat there patiently. But after a while, they had heard things about Job. Didn't know if they were true or not. But after sitting there for 7 days, looking at Job's agony and the pain and the suffering and the great loss, they came to think that, well, maybe some of that stuff is true. They brought themselves and allowed themselves to come to the place where they were believing a lie that the devil had been throwing out, quite a few of them. And they came to the conclusion, God must be punishing Job. There's no other explanation. There's something in Job's life, and God is punishing him for it. And it kind of serves as a reminder, because when bad things happen to us, they're trials. God will give us trials to show everybody how godly we are. But when bad things happen to somebody else, they're getting spanked. Our problems, it's because we're godly. Their problems, it's because they're evil and wicked. And unfortunately, we've all been there. All been there. Job's friends showed up because they cared. They stayed because they cared. But when they started talking, the more things that they said, the worse things got. And the reason is because our words are windows to our heart. What's really inside of a person's heart? All you have to do is let them talk, and after a while you'll see. You'll see the contents of the heart because they're revealed by the words spoken. Julius and Ethel Rosenberg stood trial back in 1951. They were convicted of espionage. They were spies. They were convicted because they were selling secrets, passing secrets to the Soviets. They were sending top secret information about our radar systems, jet propulsion, nuclear weapons and designs. This couple was put on trial. They were both convicted. And they were convicted primarily due to the testimony of a man called David Greenglass. That was Ethel's brother. Ethel Rosenberg's brother is the guy that gave the damaging testimony. And the reason that he did so was because he worked at the Los Alamos project, working on the nuclear bomb. He worked on the Manhattan Project. He was a man who was in the know. When she was convicted, she was sent to Sing Sing prison. They put her in the electric chair. They gave her 3 blasting shocks of electricity. She was still alive. Gave her 2 more. Smoke started coming out of the top of her head. Well, she was dead, miserable, dead. And there was one tidbit of information that did not come out for years. Her brother made a plea bargain. He got 9.5 years in prison and not executed in the electric chair. 43 years later, in 1996, Ethel's brother finally admitted that he had lied about her being a spy. She was clueless. The spy was his wife, not his sister. Why did he lie about his sister? His reason was because he loved his wife more than his sister. And so to keep his wife out of the electric chair, he sent his sister there. Can you imagine how she must have felt sitting on death row? She knows that she's innocent. She knows that her brother's lying. She can't convince anybody. She can't do anything to get herself off the hook. Her brother lied. She's going to pay for it. And that is close to how Job must have felt to be the godliest man in the world, and yet his friends are throwing him under the bus. His friends are repeating all of the lies, the things that they have heard. Betrayal is such a hard thing to accept. But that was not his worst problem. Take a look at chapter 22, verse number 6. The worst thing in Job's life was not being slandered. In verse 6, "For thou hast taken a pledge from thy brother for naught, and stripped the naked of their clothing. Thou hast not given water to the weary to drink, and thou hast withholden bread from the hungry. But as for the mighty man, he had the earth, and the honorable man dwelt in it. Thou hast sent widows away empty, and the arms of the fatherless have been broken." For godly people like Job, you can strip them of just about everything, but there's one thing that is most precious, and that is a good name. Money, God can give that back. Poor health, God can heal. But when ungodly people spread lies about a good person, they have spent their entire life trying to live for God, and then somebody starts shooting out a pack of lies, and that good name is tarnished. That hurts. After having lost everything but his life, Job is now being accused of some very foul things throughout the community. In verse 6, people are saying that he actually took people's clothing when they didn't pay what he had loaned to them. In verse 7, the rumor is that he refused to share food and water to people who were hungry and thirsty. In verse 9, it was rumored that he refused to help widows and that he was physically abusive to children, breaking their arms. And why is Job just hearing these false accusations now? Well, they're willing to say it now. Oh, they've heard him for a long time. Well, now they're willing to tell him because they've had a falling out. They don't care how he feels now. The reason that these individuals, these friends, were repeating these things to Job is because they were now convinced the rumors were true. Chapter 40, verse number 1. The worst thing in Job's life was not being rebuked by God, and he was. Verse number 1. Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, "Shall he that contendeth with the Almighty instruct him? He that reproveth God, let him answer it." Then Job answered the Lord and said, "Behold, I am vile. What shall I answer thee? I will lay mine hand upon my mouth." After having lost practically everything, Job is at the end of his rope, and then God shows up, and it's not to comfort him. God is now going to demand an accounting from Job for his words. The word contendeth means to debate, to argue. God is taking Job to the task for how he's been treating God, because he was treating God as if, you know, God just doesn't know what I'm going through. God doesn't know and understand what I'm dealing with. The word reproveth means to convict. And Job had placed himself as God's judge. He was looking at God's behavior and deciding, you know what, that's not good enough. In order to put Job in his place, God uses 2 chapters and 77 questions. Sounds like a deposition. 77 questions that stunned and humbled Job. At that moment in time, I mean, having to face God, it would seem like this has got to be the worst time in his life. But it wasn't. Go back, if you would, to chapter 1. Last thing this morning is this. Verse number 6, chapter 1, verse 6. I mentioned earlier that all of these things, we tend to look at this financial problem in our life is almost defined by it. We can't sleep at night because we're so worried about the finances. Or there's a tumor. We don't know how it's going to work out. Do I have cancer? Do I have not? And that ailment defines us. It locks us up in a prison all its own. And we look at that issue like it's the only thing. But it's not. Every problem that you have in life, they're all connected by something else. In chapter 1, verse number 6, the worst thing by far was not knowing why. That was it. In verse 6, now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, "Whence comest thou?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it." And the Lord said unto Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil?" That's the why. But Job didn't know anything about it. And the why makes all the difference. In November 2015, a Lebanese man was in a crowded market. He made a decision to blow himself up. And that's not such a surprising thing after 9/11. That's kind of what we have heard taking place around the world. They'll strap on some explosives as a vest and they'll go out and blow themselves up and kill the bad guys for Allah. The problem is, this Lebanese man was not a fanatic. And he did choose to blow himself up. But the problem is, why did he choose to blow himself up? His name was Adel Termas. He was walking through a very crowded market with his daughter. An explosion took place. It was during the rush hour. 45 people immediately killed. Another 200 people were wounded. He had been knocked to the ground when he got himself up. And so his daughter was okay. He looked around and he saw a second suicide bomber. Hand on a trigger. He had a split-second decision to make. A second explosion could kill his daughter. Hurt a lot more people. And so he ran and tackled that suicide bomber, knocking him to the ground, and he chose to blow himself up. Isn't that a little bit of a difference than what we initially thought? We can look at what's taking place and we can come to so many wrong conclusions, and what we need to realize is when things happen in our lives, most of the time, God's not going to tell us why. And if we only knew why, Job could have handled his problems so differently. And most of the problems that we're going to have in life, they need to be put into perspective. God knows why. He has allowed it. And I'll give you the solution right now to about every problem you're going to face. All you have to do is come before God and tell Him this: I love you and I trust you completely. Meaning, I don't have to know why. If Job had known why, boy, he could have handled his friends, his wife, the loss of his kids. He could have dealt with everything if he had only known why. But God's withholding that from us. The only good option we have: I love you and I trust you completely. Let's bow for prayer. Father, would you please bless our folks with us this morning? Please meet their needs. And dear God, I'm sure that a lot of folks are going through some difficulties, some challenges, some problems. And the question is always there: why? Lord, help us above all things to trust you, because you love us, and therefore we should trust you with everything that we have.